From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Matthew 5:10 states, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." For millions of faithful around the globe, Christian persecution is an everyday reality. Catholic values such as truth, freedom, and justice are replaced with fear, repression, and the loss of human dignity. The numbers paint a grim picture. Almost 65% of the world's population, that's almost 5.4 billion people, live in countries with serious or very serious violations of religious freedom. Primarily, Christians are persecuted because of their faith, but economic and political situations deepen the problem. In some countries, Christians can be seen as a threat to the ruling government, and persecution is a way to maintain control. In places such as Nigeria and Iraq, religious intolerance is a factor. In Nigeria, the violence is primarily driven by various militant groups in the Muslim majority of the North and Middle Belt regions. While in Iraq, Christians face ongoing displacement due to the actions of groups like ISIS. EWTN News Nightly Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales recently attended a panel discussion focusing on what Catholics face in those regions of the world and what the future holds.
Good evening. A number of bills are making their way through Congress aimed at stopping the persecution of Catholics, specifically in Nigeria and Iraq, where many say a genocide is taking place. Recently, an event sponsored by the Knights of Columbus gave an eye-opening discussion with Catholic priests and others who are on the ground and have witnessed the murder and violent acts against the faithful firsthand.
You can see here the common calling card that ISIS left behind is a decapitated statue of Mary with both hands cut off.
Stephen Rocha is the director of the Institute for Catholic Humanitarian Service at Franciscan University. In 2014, after ISIS attacked northern Iraq, Rocha worked as legal counsel for nearly 150,000 displaced Christians being taken care of by the Catholic Diocese of Erbil in Iraq. He tells me for 4 years he lived and worked among the people, documenting with photographs their struggles and pain.
All of these Christians living in these marginalized situations, they're human beings. You know, and our faith teaches us, above all else, the importance of the spark of human dignity that's in every one of us.
Father Karam Shamasha knows that struggle firsthand. In 2014, he and thousands of others were driven from their parish by ISIS. He says today in Iraq, ISIS is not as strong but still exists, and Christians are persecuted through discrimination.
Thanks to God, nowadays, there is no this group of ISIS. They are not exist in public. But unfortunately, there's still some mentalities that they are still thinking in the others like enemies.
Father adds, from time to time, small groups of ISIS fighters will just appear in towns and villages and murder people of faith. Many are concerned one day they will rise again.
Thanks to God, we are still there. We are fighting to remain not just numbers in these countries, but we are fighting to, in fact, be a real member that can shine, that can give light to all the people that they are around.
Now, on to the topic of Nigeria.
During the panel discussion, Stephen Rocha also shared photographs of his work in Nigeria, where he helped run a Catholic healthcare facility and school. He says the mass kidnappings of women which took place in Nigeria a few weeks ago happens all the time, often unreported.
The people are just living in absolute fear of their own personal safety, inability to move around, inability to farm, all of these things really just cascading right now.
Catholic priests agree and add the persecution is taking place through government policy, like establishing Sharia law, and through physical violence from militant Islamic groups like the Boko Haram.
Christians are killed, Christians are kidnapped, complete destruction of Christian schools and churches and hospitals. As I speak, even so many priests have been kidnapped and killed, and a lot of them are still with the kidnappers in the bushes.
Right now, the greatest concern are for those living in refugee camps. Many see no future, and many are barely surviving with not enough to eat. Priests say the government, with the help of other countries, must act now.
There are children who are born in these IDP camps, who grew up in this war, who will get married in this war. And I think for us, that is really a very serious problem. We need to offer the psychological support, the behavioral therapy that are needed in order to help them to recover, not only physically, materially, but also spiritually.
Father says that the only way that the cycle will be broken is through a major change in the government. Despite it all, Father says that the Catholic faith in Nigeria is strong. It's now estimated that 35 million Catholics are in the country. Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
As Eric mentioned, clergy are being kidnapped in Nigeria. That kind of traumatic experience could shake a person's faith. But for one victim, it only made his belief in the Lord stronger. Our Vatican correspondent, Valentina Di Donato, has that story.
This is Brother Amos Stephen, a seminarian, a theologian, and a survivor of religious persecution.
Barely 4 days after we returned from our Christmas and New Year break, it happened on Wednesday, probably 30 to 45 minutes after the normal school light out. I believe that those that kidnapped us were already in the school. When they kidnapped us.
Brother Amos is from the Catholic Diocese of Zaria, Nigeria, currently studying at the Pontifical Urban University in Rome. Unfortunately, his case is not isolated, as Pope Leo XIV highlighted in one of his Angelus prayers last month.
Christians today are still suffering from discrimination and persecution in various parts of the world. In particular, I think of Bangladesh, Nigeria, Mozambique, Sudan, and other countries from which we often hear news of attacks on communities and places of worship.
Regina Lynch is the executive president of Aid to the Church in Need.
Freedom of religion is not just a privilege, it's a human right. And we just see the situation worsening in the world.
In the organization's annual report on religious freedom, it concludes that discrimination of individuals comes in many different forms. Violence, unjust imprisonment, displacement, and abductions.
On that very night, when we heard the sound at the entrance to our hostel, I tapped my fellow roommates, because we were three in our room. All of us were kidnapped. In total, we are four in numbers. So in the process of we trying to escape, it was already late for us.
The men later learned they were part of a mass abduction of seminarians. In Nigeria, extremist groups such as Boko Haram and the Islamic State West Africa province are some of the drivers of this violence.
Among all those that were kidnapped, I believe we are the youngest. So they normally flog us every day. They will look for cane, and probably sometimes 5 to 7 of them, they will be flogging us at the same time.
Brother Amos still has nightmares about the unspeakable violence he endured. The kidnappers released him 1 month later after they demanded ransom money. He tells me that cash is one of the big incentives for these terrible acts. Money is one incentive that drives this violence, but this is just one piece of this extremist insurgency aiming to eliminate the Christian minority from Nigeria. But the fact that Pope Leo XIV reminds the faithful of the continued plight of persecuted Christians strengthens his faith.
The Holy Father, the universal pastor of the church, so him pointing out to some of the countries that are being affected, I love the persecution and the killings and the kidnappings. To me, it shows the fatherly kindness, his heart of humility on reaching out to his flocks.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
From Nigeria and Uganda, Christians and their leaders are under attack in Africa. From abductions to ruthless killings, Christians face threats from government and paramilitary groups. Father Don Bosco Onyela, editor-in-chief of ACI Africa, EWTN's news service in Africa, joins us now. Thank you so much for your time. First, what can you tell us about the state of persecuted Christians right now?
Thanks for having me, Veronica. The state of persecution of Christians in Africa remains the highest levels recorded, according to reports. And this is a mixture of factors that contribute to it, including some weak state control, some political instabilities in some cases, civil conflicts, and military groups that are present in some parts of this continent. And it's not just about killings, it's about attacks on churches and Christians, and property and displacement of people and forced conversions and intimidation. So it takes different forms.
Do we know which countries are the worst right now?
Yes. Nigeria has usually taken the lead as the deadliest country actually in the world for the persecution of Christians. We've also had reports from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. This is in Central Africa. And much of the violence in the eastern provinces, like North Kivu, where armed groups like the Allied Democratic Forces, sometimes the allied to global jihadist networks, they have attacked Christians, civilians. They have attacked church people who are, you know, going through worship. We have had reports of young people on a vigil in a church being attacked. We also have reports from Mozambique. This is in Southern Africa. We also have reports from the Horn of Africa. This is Ethiopia and Eritrea, where the government has actually confiscated church facilities like schools and hospitals. So this is part of the persecution of Christians, I would say.
What is the Catholic Church doing to protect people?
There are a number of mitigating factors. One, of course, is just to strengthen security in parishes, in convents, in schools, by having perimeter walls and enforcing the security personnel. There is also working closely with the local communities and also adjusting school routines and also giving some travel advisories on roads to avoid areas not to go to, and establishing some crisis response teams. But overall, there is also the effort of just voicing these concerns and making the world know that, yes, Christians are being targeted and that this is a problem that the government can actually solve if it is serious with its business as the protector of the peoples.
Father, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Veronica.
Another African country of concern, Sudan. After nearly 2 years of war, more than 12 million people have been driven out of their homes, making it the worst displacement crisis in the world. With Catholics and Christians being regularly targeted there, a recent congressional hearing took a deeper look at the persecution and renewed a global call to action. Once again, we are joined by Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales.
Good evening, Veronica. The civil war in Sudan has received renewed attention after President Donald Trump vowed to secure a peace deal in the African nation following his meeting with the Saudi Crown Prince in November. United States lawmakers from both parties sharply criticized the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, for its alleged role in fueling the war in Sudan, along with other countries.
We cannot turn a blind eye to the UAE's role in supplying weapons that kill innocent Sudanese civilians. Simultaneously, we see the malign influence of Russia seeking a naval base at Port Sudan and reports of Iranian drones bolstering the SAF. Sudan has become a playground for foreign powers while the people serve as collateral damage.
The situation in Sudan continues to escalate between the country's two military factions, the RSF, Rapid Support Forces, and the SAF, Sudanese Armed Forces, each trying to rule with innocent victims caught in the crossfire. Congressman Smith urged President Donald Trump to intervene personally, suggesting he call the United Arab Emirates leadership to demand they stop supplying weapons.
That both the RSF and the SAF have a common enemy in Christians. Christians have been denied food aid and told, unless you leave your Christianity, you will not get any food.
Ranking member Sarah Jacobs joined the condemnation, criticizing the Trump administration for bypassing a congressional hold in May to approve a $1.4 billion arms sales to the UAE, which included helicopters and F-16 fighter jet parts.
To be clear, this criticism is not specific to this administration. I was also critical of the Biden administration's unwillingness to hold the UAE accountable. I believe that the United States needs to use its significant leverage with the UAE to pressure them to finally end their support to the RSF.
In a statement released before the hearing, the UAE embassy in Washington categorically denied the accusations, asserting that there is, quote, no substantiated evidence that the country has provided support to the RSF or any other warring party. Despite these denials, State Department officials face repeated questions during the hearing about why the U.S. has not utilized its leverage to stop the alleged interference. Officials maintain that the U.S. is, quote, exerting all the pressure we can through diplomatic channels. Nicole Weidersheim, deputy director at Human Rights Watch, says Congress must do more by bringing new sanctions and humanitarian assistance.
Yeah, there's religious persecution here in the history of this country and the division. There's also just ethnic persecution. One side saying that people aren't Muslim enough in Darfur. These things have all been part of the characteristic of the war. But now you have so many outside actors and states, primarily in the Gulf, who are arming the perpetrators and continuing the fighting. And the civilians are just lost in the mix.
Church leaders have also raised alarms over the conflict. In two appeals last month, Pope Leo XIV urged prayer for the victims of violence in Sudan and even highlighted the persecution of Christians there. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come on this special edition of EWTN News Nightly, including a closer look at the situation for Christians in the Middle East, plus how the birth of Jesus is inspiring one Catholic organization to help in Bethlehem. Welcome back. Now we turn to the Middle East, which faces war and fragile ceasefires impacting the lives of Christians striving to live their faith. Joining us now to discuss Christianity in the Middle East is Alberto Fernandez, EWTN News contributor and a former U.S. diplomat. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Can you give us an overview of what Christian persecution looks like right now in the Middle East?
Well, in the Middle East, especially this year, what we've seen is kind of the slow, hidden persecution. There have been a few spectacular examples of direct, open persecution. Obviously, the horrific bombing of a Greek Orthodox church in June in Damascus by the Islamic State was probably the most horrible public one. But what you see kind of on the day-to-day is the slow, steady pressure of regimes, of Islamic society, in ways that are indirect, that are small, but that are continuous, which basically push Christians out of society, make them feel that they're unwelcomed, and force them to emigrate. That's the reality, the bitter reality on the ground for most Middle East Christians today.
What countries are of particular concern?
Well, sadly, there's no country with a substantial Christian minority that is not a country of concern. Certainly, Lebanon, which has traditionally a large Christian population, is a country of concern. Syria and Iraq, which also had traditional Christian communities, which are under tremendous pressure. But even countries that are seen as more stable or Western allies, like Jordan and Egypt as well, it's a general trend. And then you have, of course, Palestine, Gaza, where you had Christians were not the target of that war. They were kind of bystanders, you know, kind of not on either side. but they suffered greatly. Basically, there's been a two-year economic crisis, a depression for Christians because pilgrimages and pilgrims and the money that they spent was disrupted for basically the last 2 years after October 7th, 2023.
Pope Leo recently visited Lebanon and Turkey, setting a diplomatic tone to his first trip to the Middle East. How do you see the Pope playing a role in the protection of Christians there?
Well, he certainly provided great encouragement for the Christian communities of the East, not just in Turkey and Lebanon, but many others, many leaders, patriarchs and archbishops came from throughout the region to meet him, especially in Lebanon. So it was a moment of refreshment, a moment of spiritual encouragement, which I think was very welcomed and very timely by, very well received by the Christians of the Levant. But it was a moment in time, and there are concrete political, economic, and other actions that need to happen as well. That's not in the Pope's purview, although I'm sure he's playing an important role behind the scenes in pushing people to do the right thing.
Alberto Fernandez, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In the midst of all the turmoil, we want to turn to a story of hope. One organization just 1,500 steps from the birthplace of Christ is delivering hope through new life. Holy Family Hospital in Bethlehem serves mothers and babies of every faith. Joining us today is Ambassador Michelle Burke-Bow, President of Holy Family Hospital and the Order of Malta's Ambassador to Palestine. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So first, tell us about the Holy Family Hospital and what you do.
So we, I serve as the ambassador to Palestine from the Order of Malta. So I'm responsible for the state-to-state relations between the Order of Malta, which is sovereign, and at the same time a lay religious order, and the state of Palestine. We practice humanitarian diplomacy, so we have many humanitarian projects across Palestine. But our biggest one is Holy Family Hospital, which is an infant and maternity hospital delivering 4,000 babies a year.
And who do you serve in the region?
We serve everybody in need. We serve the refugees. We serve the city people. We have an all Palestinian staff, Muslim and Christian. We serve Muslims and Christians. But most of all, we champion life. We deliver babies as small as 1 pound, and we nurture them to be able to be big enough and independent, breathing and eating, to be able to go home with their families. It's a beautiful gift of life.
Can you share with us what you're seeing with infants that are being born now?
Well, you know, because of the war in Gaza, which is 45 miles away, it's affecting Bethlehem greatly. There are no pilgrimages to speak of, a few, but they don't stay in Bethlehem. The work permits for Jerusalem have gone from 60,000 down to 4. And I'll say this mostly affects the Christian community because they're the ones involved in the pilgrimages and they have more of the work permits. So other entities can go. But right now, Bethlehem has been at 90% of the workforce without salaries since October of 23.
Are you hopeful to see improvements now that the ceasefire is in effect?
You know, I'm always hopeful. But we need more than a ceasefire. We need hope to flourish. We need development in Bethlehem. We need housing blocks. You know, when you live behind an occupation wall, there's no room. There's no land. It makes hope difficult.
If people are interested in helping, how can they do so?
Well, they can help us at birthplaceofhope.org. birthplaceofhope.org, which is our website. They can go on, they can learn more about our work, and they can make a gift of hope. And at Christmas, what's more beautiful than giving the gift of a baby born in Bethlehem, 1,500 footsteps from where Jesus was born? It doesn't get more hopeful than that.
Ambassador, thank you so much.
Thank you indeed.
Up next on this special edition of EWTN News Nightly, how Catholics are suffering in the war between Ukraine and Russia. In Ukraine, Ukraine, while Christian persecution may not be as visible, it is still present. Attacks on Christians have been increasing since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war. Religious persecution began in 2014 with Russia's annexation of Crimea. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom recommended Russia be categorized as a country of particular concern for egregious violations of religious freedom. Since the start of the war, more than 600 churches or religious structures have been damaged or closed. Almost 30 religious leaders have been killed, and several Catholic priests have been arrested, tortured, and/or killed. Although about 8% of Ukrainians are Catholic, there are no official publicly functioning priests. Joining us to discuss persecuted Christians in Ukraine is Stephen Moore, founder of the Ukraine Freedom Project. Thanks so much for coming on.
Of course. Always great to be with EWTN when I'm in D.C.
So can you tell us about the situation in Ukraine when it comes to Christians who are being persecuted?
Yeah, it's really horrific. It's some of the worst things that I've ever seen. I went to Ukraine on day five of the war to help and started meeting Christians who have been tortured and families of Christians who have been murdered and by the Russians. And it was just so horrific. I just felt like people in America needed to know. And, you know, right now, there is not a single Catholic priest left in Russian-occupied Ukraine. And, you know, Vladimir Putin has chased them all out or he's murdered them. And, you know, there's 3.5 million people who live in occupied Ukraine. And some, you know, close to 3 million of them are Christians. And probably half a million are Catholics. And these are folks who now can't see a priest. When people die in occupied Ukraine, they call an Orthodox priest because there's no Catholic priest left in occupied Ukraine. Vladimir Putin has shut down every church in occupied Ukraine that he does not control.
So this is an intersection of politics, but also religion. Who could help get that message out, do you think? Could maybe do more?
Oh, yeah. Listen, we have a short film that we just released this week. It's called No Priest Left. And it tells the stories of Ukrainian Catholic priests who have been treated very, very badly by the Russians, tortured and driven out of town. One guy, they made him walk several miles. One priest had to walk several miles through, like, minefields and combat zones. They said, yeah, you can go back to the Ukrainian side, have fun. You know, so there's miles of people shooting at each other and drones and mines. And miraculously made it through. We tell that guy's story. And so No Priest Left is the name of it. You can see it on YouTube. And we'd love to show it on EWTN as well.
Now, of course, we know that Pope Leo met with President Zelensky, and they're trying to bring children back to their families to do that reunification. But also, are we hearing anything further on what's happening to people that are being persecuted there? Can you tell us about both of those situations?
Yeah, there's some bills moving through Congress to bring light to this. There's folks in the State Department that are talking about this. But it's, again, it's one of those things that's just pushed down. And I tell you, what needs to happen is that any peace agreement that comes out between Ukraine and Russia, one, Vladimir Putin's already in violation with 25 peace agreements with Ukraine. So we can't expect this one to last long. But in the text of it, there needs to be something that says Catholic churches can practice their faith and be protected under Russian occupation, because that's not happening now. Same with Baptist churches. Baptists are the third largest Christian denomination in Ukraine after Orthodox and Catholic. They've been all shut down as well. So there needs to be an authority inside Russian-occupied Ukraine who can protect religious freedom, who can protect the rights of Ukrainian who want to worship God the way they want to, rather than the way that Putin wants them to.
Stephen Moore, thank you so much for all that you do and for telling us more about that.
Appreciate it. Good to be here.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.